Steve Thomas, branch manager here at GCPL, and I am with youth services manager Amy Billings. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell me about the mission of the youth services department and how it's changed in recent years?
Sure. Youth services is all about connecting people with books, and we focus on children, teens, and families, and we work towards doing programs that will bring customers into the library for neat experiences.
So you do programs at the branches and outside of the branches as well, is that right?
That's right. We used to be almost exclusively in the branch. Back in 1995, we went into a centralized programming system. And what that meant was only a certain number of librarians would do children's programming. And every time there was a program in the branch, we would get into a vehicle and drive to that branch. And that didn't leave very much time for outreach. But with our current configuration, we are out and about at all kinds of community events now, and that's been really exciting.
Can you talk about some examples of some outreach events that you do now? I know, like, the Stories in the Park is a neat program that you guys do.
Yeah, we're really excited about Storytime in the Park. We've recently been working with the Parks Department a lot more, and it started with we started visiting their summer camps, which the Park Department holds for 8 weeks in the summer. And a couple of years ago, we started visiting summer camps to talk up summer reading program. The next year, we were able to add a registration piece, so we were able to register kids who were at camp for summer reading. And this year, we decided to do an additional event, which is outside of the camps, where we go to the parks, and we've picked a different Gwinnett County park once a week for the whole summer, and we're going to do story time out in the open air in a park pavilion. We're really excited. We've never done anything like that before, but it sounds fun.
Yeah, very cool. So, as you said, you're not able to do a lot more outreach, and that's because we now have a position called Early Education Library Associates. Can you talk about the kind of work that they're sort of expected to do? I know that you're not really supervising them, but you're sort of a spiritual mentor. I don't know what the right word would be for that, but
I hope we can be a resource for them and help them do their jobs, because they are a really important part of what we do. Story time is the bread and butter of most library systems, and story times traditionally are for those that are five and under. So our early education library associates generally concentrate on doing programs for five and unders. They've taken over the week in, week out story times. In most branches, that would be one program for toddlers and a different program for preschoolers. Although having an early education library associate in every branch means that they can really tailor it to their branch and do the kinds of programming that best meets the needs of that particular branch. They've been great because having so many more people that are passionate about library services to children has really energized the branches, I think. They have time to get to know their customers on a real personal level. When the kids come in to return books, they might see their story time programmer at the desk and be able to have a good conversation. The ELAs are able to do a lot more decorating than youth services was ever able to do. And, you know, they've come with their own passions and their own interests, and we've had some really great programs come out of some of our new staff members.
Very good. And some of those new programs are STEAM related, science, technology, engineering, arts, and
math.
Yeah. I knew there was an M in there somewhere. And libraries have overall kind of been openly embracing the STEAM maker movement kind of stuff. Can you talk about how you guys have embraced that and gotten that into your programming?
STEAM took off about, I'd say, 2 to 3 years ago, and it's just continued to grow every year. There's an increased focus in the education world for STEAM, which is, as you said, science, technology, education, arts, and math. It used to be STEM, but the arts community stepped up and said, hey, don't forget about us. We're important, too. And so STEM really runs the gamut. You could have a STEM program which involves a 3D printer. That's a classic example of a STEM program, where you might have a 3D printer out, show customers some of the free open source software that they can use to do their own designs, modify existing designs, or do their own, and then show them how the printer works. And we've done that. We have a couple of people in youth services that regularly take the 3D printers out, and we have done them in library branches. We've done classes in schools, and we're really anywhere that the printer can go, we can take it and do that demonstration. But STEAM also has that arts component, so we've been able to integrate some programming that deals with art, including running programs that focus on a particular artist and the style of art that he or she does, And that's been really fun. That was a program that we've wanted to do for a long time. But, you know, when you have a limited number of people doing 32 story times every week, some of those extra special programs were getting left behind. So that's an example of a good program that we've gotten to do since we've had more help doing programming. You know, we're doing a maker style program this month in the branches that's really low tech. It's a low tech maker program where Lee, who's running this program, Lee Atkinson, is teaching parents how to make Play-Doh using ingredients that you can find in your kitchen. And we take it a step further than just making the Play-Doh. We show parents how to use the Play-Doh to incorporate some early literacy skills in the home so that you're not only just playing with your kids, you're actually building those skills at the same time. One example would be, once we make the Play-Doh, we have mats where the kids roll the Play-Doh out into a snake, and then they use the snake to form a letter on their mat. And you can talk about, hey, that's the letter B. What's something that begins with B? So it's really, libraries have taken traditional programming and STEAM programming and really put their own early literacy spin on it, which has been great. We've gotten great response from customers about these programs. Families really like it, and it's something new and different for them to do at the library.
Yeah, I heard a few years ago a Storytime, a children's services librarian said that story times have always kind of been maker things because, I mean, you're always making crafts and things like that. It's a little lower tech. It's not 3D printers and art bots and all these kind of things, but or whatever, cubelets and kinds of stuff like that. But it's the spirit of the maker movement. So.
That's exactly right. It's the spirit. And it's not to say that we do use technology with the smaller kids as well. And it's great for parents because we can expose them to something that they would never be buying for their 5-year-old. You know, those cubelets are a great example in that those are perfect for about a 5-year-old because they're very hands-on. You actually hold them in your hand, and it's a really literal way to show how a computer program works. You have to have a cause, you have to have an effect, you have to have directions, and if any one of those pieces are missing, your program won't work. But most parents are not going to go out and buy this product. It's very expensive. It's intended for an educational market, but they can come to the library and use it. And so it's a great example of how the libraries make resources available to their communities that people couldn't get on their own.
Yeah, it's nice for these technology things, though, because there's all these grants out there that could help, that are wanting to feed this movement so we don't have to spend our normal...
Right. Almost. In fact, I can't think of a single one of the STEM items that we've gotten in the last several years that hasn't come from grant money. So this is all things that we've been able to add as extras to our programming, which is great because we don't want to take away from our traditional programming, but we do want to add these extra special things into as well.
So how did your department jump in to meet the challenge of teaching these STEAM skills?
That's a great question. It was a challenge. Most of us did not have any particular STEAM skills when we started in this journey. And Youth Services staff has been fabulous about just jumping in and learning. One of the things we've learned as we've gone through these programs is that we learn as much from the kids during the programs as we teach them. And I think it's really important to just give it a try. Even if it's outside your skill set, and those Lego Mindstorms and Lego WeDo products are a great example of this. Not any of us had been playing with Lego robotics before we started running programs, and we really just gave it a shot. And every time we teach a program, we learn something new, and it's been a lot of fun. I would encourage people who are feeling a little bit out of your comfort zone to just go ahead and try. The maker movement is all about making and learning, and it doesn't mean you have to be an expert.
And we also have jumped into one of the hot crazes for kids of Minecraft. Can you talk a little bit about how we got into that? I know we have our own server and all that. I'll say my kids are young enough that they're not quite into it yet, so I don't understand how it all works, but maybe you can help me understand.
I think Minecraft is great. Minecraft is a perfect example of sort of stealth programming. So kids are on the computer, they think they're playing a game, but what they're really doing is world building. They're engineering. Minecraft is, the way it works in our library system is you log on to our Minecraft server, which is a secure server. You don't have to worry about who else your children are interacting with. And the way we use it is we tend to give them a challenge. We'll say, okay, here you are in this Minecraft world, and you need to figure out how to build a house, how to build a farm, how to sustain yourself by, you know, doing all these different activities. I think any parents that are worried about Minecraft can put their mind at ease, because I think they're learning more STEAM skills through Minecraft than almost anything else that they're doing these days.
And so you talked a little bit about early literacy skills, and we know that public libraries are lifelong learning places. So we start at the earliest age, we go all the way up to seniors, everything like that. So how do you, what's the importance of learning these skills so early, and how can the library help instill those?
Well, I think most teachers and educators and parents have known that what they do with their children before they get to school is tremendously important. But there's now a new body of research that shows exactly what kids need to know in order to go to kindergarten. There's so much pressure on kids these days to hit the ground running at kindergarten and be ready to read and move faster. If you have done some of these activities with your family at home, your child has already got a leg up. They're already in a place where they can come out of the gate running with learning to read. Some of the skills that you need to have before you can learn to read are print motivation. That means you need to know that things with print on them are something fun and interesting. It's not just a bunch of squiggles on a page. You have to have print awareness. You need to know that when you see letters on a piece of paper, that those letters make words and that words are ideas. And that's not something that kids are born learning. And if we don't teach them that, they're at a disadvantage when they get to kindergarten. Some of the other skills that you need to have to learn to read include learning about the sounds of speech, so you know what letters make what sounds and what combinations of letters make sounds. You need to know your ABCs. We call that letter knowledge. And using that rope of Play-Doh to make a B is a perfect example of how you can do that in a fun way. Vocabulary is increasingly one of the most important things that's coming out about how children can flourish in a new reading environment, because there's something recently that has come out that's called the 30 million word gap. And what they found is that children from low-income homes hear 30 million less words than children from more affluent neighborhoods. And there's lots of reasons why that is. It might be there's no books in the home, so the parents aren't reading to the children. It might be that mom and dad have two jobs, and when they get home, they are tired. And so the child might watch a little bit more TV or use an iPad more. And studies have shown that those digital devices do not have the same effect as actual one-on-one interaction. So just think about it. If you are trying to learn to read, and you've never heard these words before, you don't know what they mean, you don't know them in context, you're gonna have a much harder time learning to read. So we think vocabulary is one of the most important things that librarians can help with, because when you read storybooks to children, or you come to libraries and hear story times, you're hearing this rich language. You're hearing words that aren't used in everyday, and you're hearing them explained in context. As a whole second part of that, when you listen to a story, you're developing your narrative skills. In order to read something effectively, you need to know how narrative works, a beginning, a middle, an end, a conclusion. So a lot of the things we do in the library build not only vocabulary and letter awareness, but they help kids learn how stories work. And really, stories are such a huge part of our life. People use stories to teach things from the ground up. You'll be in college and graduate school and still be hearing stories to learn. One of the things we try to tell parents, though, is that this isn't something you have to get all tense about. You don't need to sit down with flashcards. We don't need parents to feel like they need a teaching degree, because it's the interactions you have with your kids that build these skills. Anytime you're driving to the grocery store and you say to your kid, "Hey, look out the window. Do you see that construction truck?" You're building narrative skills. You're identifying things. You're using vocabulary. You're engaging your child in one-on-one talk. You're listening to what they say and responding back. So talking is one of the most basic things that parents can do to build these skills. The other things you can do as a parent are, there's five things that we say that parents can do with their kids, and that's talk, sing, read, write, and play. And if you think about it, anytime you're doing any of those with your children, you're helping them learn these early literacy skills. And these are things that libraries have been doing for a long time, in story times and otherwise, but what we're getting a lot better at is being explicit with it. We're telling parents that we're doing this. We're showing parents how to do it at home. And making sure that people are aware of the important role that libraries play in education.
Yeah, and transferring those skills to the parents can be a great part of that. It's not just them having to come here. It's sort of teaching the whole. Well, that thing we all learn in library school of teaching them how to fish, the kind of thing, so they don't have to come to the library to get it, but they get it at home as well.
Exactly. In fact, one of the most satisfying things we do is when we do this out in the community and outreach events, is we're always using these same techniques. If we're chatting with someone at a table and we're talking about, do you ever visit the library? And they say no. Well, you know, you're not going to shame them and say, well, you bad parent, you. Why haven't you been to the library? You say, gosh, did you know at the library we can teach you how to sing songs that'll make your kids smarter? So, you know, we use these same kinds of explicit learning techniques out in the community. And, you know, believe it or not, there's people out there in the community that don't know what their library has. And it's a good friendly way to help teach them.
Yeah, my kids are old enough now they don't want me to sing to them anymore. But my wife can, but no more daddy.
Yeah, I never claim to sing well. I sing, but, you know.
And one of the ways we're doing that is we have the Ready, Set, Read program now. Can you talk about what that is and how that came to be?
Ready, Set, Read is a brand new initiative for us this year. We were very fortunate to find a donor, a local Gwinnett County donor, who was interested in supporting early literacy among Gwinnett County residents. You know, one of the things we now know is that having books in the home is incredibly important to building these literacy skills with children. And, you know, it's easy for us to forget that there are some places in Gwinnett County where families do not have the resources to buy books. Books can be expensive. They might be afraid to come to the library because they don't want to incur overdue fines. So the idea of Ready, Set, Read is to give parents and families a book of their very own, flat out right, that they don't ever have to return, to help build this love of books and reading. Inside the bag, we also include a bingo card, and it has activities that parents can do on it at home. Some of them have to be done at the library, and that's our hook to get you into the library so you can come and see what we have. But a lot of them can be done at home. There's simple things like tell your child a story about your own childhood, or sing a lullaby. And the idea is that we give these parents these ideas of activities. If they want to, they can fill the bingo card out. And when they make a bingo, we give them an extra prize at the library. At the current time, what we're giving them is a second book and also an early literacy game. It's basically an Eric Carle flashcard game, which has letters and numbers and beautiful illustrations. And again, gives parents and child something to do to sit down and talk with each other. So, you know, we're hoping to get these into the hands of people who maybe are not library users. So this is strictly an outreach event for us at the moment. Some of the places that we have distributed bags are the Lawrenceville Food Co-op. We're working with them, and they are actively identifying families that they think have children of the right age, that they're interested in this, and not only giving them the bag, but explaining to them and encouraging them to visit the library. We've also identified schools where most of the attendance is an at-risk neighborhood or an at-need school. For instance, we might target a Head Start, or we might target a church where we know most of the families there are first-generation immigrants. And so far we've passed out 300 bags, and we could not do that without our intrepid early literacy associates, because they've been helping us get those out and into the hands of families. Our goal is to get 1,000 of these bags out this year. And then, you know, if we can show that the community is responding to this initiative, we hope that this is something that we could do again on an even larger scale.
Great. So we've talked mostly about early literacy skills, all the little preschoolers, things like that. But your department goes the whole age range all the way up to teenagers, basically, till they get out of high school. And one of the new initiatives we have before we'll get into summer reading here in a second, but are teen advisory councils. Can you talk about... that's even specifically called out in our new strategic plan that we have to create those and do those. Can you talk about what those are and what they'll be doing?
Yeah, this is really exciting for us. We do have a teen specialist in our department now who is specifically working with older tweens and teens. And teen advisory councils are similar to, we had something called teen advisory boards many years ago. So if you've been around a GCPL a while, you may have gone through the teen advisory board era. And these are very similar. Basically, a teen advisory board or council is a way to recruit teens to have the an ownership in their library and their library programming. teams can give you valuable feedback on the kinds of programming you're doing, the kind of books you're collecting, how if your teen area is comfortable, if they want to hang out at the library or not. The little twist we put on the teen advisory councils this year is, and again, to go with our strategic plan, is we've made them volunteers. And so that means they have to go through the volunteer application process, and they have to state up front that, yes, I'm willing to give time to my library to make it a better place. In terms of what a teen gets from the Teen Advisory Council, it's a great place to hang out with your friends, to suggest programs that you'd like to do, and then how fabulous is this leadership going to look on your college apps? It's a real chance to learn how to work together in a group. It's a chance to learn how to put forth ideas and then get a project from the beginning of the project, hey, I've got this great idea, all the way through the end, where you've thought all the scenarios through, you've purchased your supplies, you've run the program, and it's just great experience.
So the teens and all ages are all taking part in the summer reading program, which is always a big thing, always an exciting thing. And other than sort of overall just advocacy for the library as a general rule, what kind of positives do you hope that kids and teens get from the program, and kind of what, if you want to start out, kind of what's the point of summer reading, I guess I should say, and if you can talk a little bit about like Summer Slide and things like that.
Summer Slide is actually one of the biggest things that we can help with, because it's really a documented fact. Children who get out of school in May or June and don't engage in learning over the summer actually lose ground. So when they come back to school in the fall, the first thing the teacher has to do is sort of catch them back up to where their peers are. And if the teachers aren't able to do that, from day one, they're starting out behind. And even if they do catch them up, think of all that lost time that could have been spent learning new material. Summer Slide tells us that the thing that Summer Slide tells us that we didn't know before is that these gaps are cumulative. So they add up year after year after year. And by the time kids get to third grade, if they're behind in reading, there's only a 1 in 8 chance they're going to catch up. So the next year, they go to fourth grade. They're expected to do homework on a fourth grade level, read fourth grade textbooks. They don't read on a fourth grade level. So they're already at a disadvantage. They can't get their homework through their homework without help, and that's frustrating. It turns them off of school, and it's just a huge vicious cycle. What the summer reading program can do is keep kids engaged during that summer months. And one of the most important things that I like to emphasize when I talk about summer reading is that you want it to be voluntary and you want it to be recreational. This is not the time to tackle War and Peace. This is the time to let kids read whatever they want and be really flexible about that. For some kids, it might be checking out cookbooks and learning how to do a recipe. Think of all the reading and math that's involved in learning how to cook something. For some kids, they may want to read the entire series of comic books of their favorite superhero. That's great. Think of all the reading practice they're getting there. They're building their narrative skills, their vocabulary, and they're having a good time. They're learning that reading is something that you can do for fun and to learn. I think that the other great thing that libraries can do during the summer is give kids a place they can come together with their friends. For the younger kids, we have story times and crafts. We've taught kids how to make origami animals, how to make jewelry. We've made all kinds of crafts with them, which they can then take home and do again and share with their family. For teens, it's great to have a place where they can be away from home with their friends, doing what they like to do, and learning how the library is a great third space. It's not home, it's not work, it's a community place. And if we don't build those relationships with the kids and teens now, when they're adults, their library isn't really going to be meaningful for them. And so those are our future voters. So right. We need to also make sure that the library is someplace that they value. And making some good memories is one good way to do that.
And can you talk a little bit about just what the theme is for this year and what's going on this year for summer reading?
Yep, our theme is a health, sports, games, and fitness theme. It's for kids. We're going to be on your mark, get set, read. So we've got lots of fun programs planned that talk about sports and games. And we're trying to be real inclusive. So the kinds of activities we're going to do at the library are things that anyone of any ability can do. You don't need a special skill. And for teens, the slogan is "Get in the game, read." And so that really lends itself to a lot of fun activities. We're going to do some giant life-size games like Jenga made out of giant blocks. We're going to do some brain games with the teens where we're going to test their brain skills. We're going to show some great movies. We're going to do some educational programs where we talk about health and fitness in a fun way. There's lots of different directions you can go in, and I know the branches are going to be decorating like crazy to get this to go with this theme. It just is such a kick to see how each branch is going to come up with their own spin on the summer reading theme, and each one is usually just better than the next. So in the summer reading program, we give kids a reading log, and we ask them to note what they're reading. But an important thing for us is to make sure that the kids understand that we want them to read, but it's completely up to them what they read, how often they read, and what kind of materials they're reading. It's not a contest to see who can read the most books over the summer, because you might have one kid reading Harry Potter, and he's not going to get through the same amount of books as somebody over here who's reading short picture books. So we ask parents and children to make a self-selected goal, and it should be a reach goal. This shouldn't be something you can do in a week, but set a goal, either pages or time or number of books, or just make a mark on your record every time you read. However the family chooses to use the log is fine with us. And then just come in and let us know when you've met that goal. Another thing that's fun about summer reading program is it's completely on the honor system. You know, the worst case scenario, if someone cheats and says they read when they didn't, you know what they get? A free book. And we want them to have that book no matter what. So that's why we're pretty open with how we run the program. And it's really a good thing for everybody. Mm-hmm.